pick up Mark chapter 16, where we left off this morning, and where this morning we were thinking about the glorious resurrection. What must come after that are witnesses to the truth. And that's what we see in this closing, or in these closing verses of Mark's gospel. Because the gravity of the empty tomb and the interaction with the angel has left the women, that is Mary Magdalene, Mary the mother of James, and Salome, as we read in verse 8, trembling and astonished. They are not sure what to make of it all, and so they fled the tomb. They were afraid. Afraid what might happen to them if the religious authorities hear their report, or fear that they will never be believed because they are women. Whatever their reasons, here we are 2,000 years later, believing their testimony as they reported it to Mark for him to document. And as we leave the women, we come to a section in the Bible that perhaps is a little bit uncomfortable for us. Because for most of our Bibles, if not all of them, you will see a line under verse 8 and then the following or something similar in brackets. The earliest manuscripts and some other ancient witnesses do not have Mark 16 and verses 9 to 20. You might say, well, okay, let's close our Bibles, let's go home, that's us. But it is recorded for us in the canon of Scripture. It has been proved, and so we have it tonight before us, and the question is, what do we do with it? Well, English language Bible translators have always worked at trying to ensure biblical accuracy. Whether it is with the Authorized or the King James Version that many of us grew up with, the latest translation of the NIV that people use, or the more accurate English text at the minute, which would be the English Standard Version, each translation team has gone back to the earliest documents in existence. And the copies and documents in existence today for Mark are as early as 135 AD, with the most recent copy about 1200 AD. And these documents have been discovered over the years in various parts of Palestine and the ancient world of the Roman Empire. And you have to remember, with no printing presses, every copy had to be handwritten. And with this process, there would naturally be errors along the way. So as many copies of the text as possible will ensure the more accurate translation. And even as late as 1946, portions of Mark's writings were found as part of the Dead Sea Scrolls. And the earliest copies of Mark don't include verses 9 to 20. So when you read it and look at the original Greek words used in this section, there are some words here that Mark hasn't used before, and that's not common in what is biblical translation. And so it's quite a telling sign, as most Bible authors tend to use a limited number of words in what they write, and they'll repeat words to convey their message. But, as one commentator puts it, when we come to this section of Mark's gospel, we handle it carefully. And so with so many differences from Mark's main gospel writing, we can say that there may be a number of reasons why verses 9 to 20 are there. But this evening, without going much further into how we deal with all of this, I'm going to tell you how we're going to do it. We're going to treat it in the light of other gospel accounts. Because it's these other gospel accounts that will confirm what these final verses of Mark's gospel are about. And so the passage itself splits into four parts. And I wonder, did you notice that the first three are disbelief? So the first one is after the resurrection, an appearance to Mary Magdalene. Then an appearance to two travelers. Then an appearance to the 11. And then the ascension. And so we start with a resurrection appearance to Mary Magdalene in verses 9 to 11. In all four Gospels, Mary Magdalene's name is found among the first witnesses of the resurrection. And it's in John's Gospel that we get the fuller story. Because in John chapter 20 and verses 10 to 18, we read how Mary visits the tomb. She waits outside it. She's crying. The angels ask her why she is crying, and she replies, "They have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." Having said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing, but she did not know that it was Jesus. Now, this new man in the scene asks the same questions as the angels did. And Mary answers the question, thinking she's speaking to the gardener. But Jesus reveals himself to her by simply saying her name, and her eyes are open to the truth that's standing right there in front of her. Mary rushes to tell the disciples because she believes in the resurrected Jesus. But that's where John finishes. It's actually Mark that tells us of the disbelief. And it is from the disciples, and we're told they did not believe. And so we have the first part of this text, and it ends with disbelief or unbelief. Even though Mary has told them the story, the disciples choose not to believe. It's beyond their comprehension because of everything that's happened in the days before. And as we continue then in this passage, we come to the second thing, and it's Jesus appears to two disciples. And he's appearing to them, Mark tells us, while they were walking in the country. And verse 12 tells us that Jesus appeared to them in a different form. And this may be why the travelers didn't recognize Jesus while on the road. And it's Luke's gospel that we find the account of these two as they traveled to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And this is one of those most beautiful stories following the resurrection, because it's about midday on the Sunday, and as they walk, they're talking about the events that have happened in Jerusalem. Jesus comes up and walks with them and asks them what they're discussing. And in a wonderful image, Luke records that they're stopped in their tracks, and they look at this new traveler in unbelief, wondering how and why he doesn't know what has happened. And they go on to recount all that took place in the past few days. But it's Jesus' reply that is the most grace-filled. In Luke 24, we